Hello, and welcome to another podcast in our Resilience and Reinvention series. I'm Lynn Worsley, the Director of the Resilience Centre. I reckon we've all got a pretty good idea of hope, but it's interesting and really helpful to dig down into the big part it plays in helping us to meet life head-on with resilience. And here's the question. Can we nurture and grow a better sense of hope? John Burns is a clinical psychologist with us here at the Resilience Centre. He's a warm and engaging and very experienced therapist and has worked with young people and families for a very long time. He's done a great deal of thinking and has a lot of experience helping people to rekindle hope. He's speaking here with Lee Hatcher.
John, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Great to be here. Great to see you. As Lid said in our intro, we've all got a pretty good idea of hope. But from your work, how does a clinical psychologist define it?
I think one of the really important things to understand about hope is we think about hope as a feeling. I'm feeling hopeful. I think it's important for us to also understand hope's more than that. It's a way of seeing things. It's a way of seeing the world. It's a cognition. It's a thought. And it's that thought that there is something on the horizon for me that is good. There's something for me to look forward to. And from that point of view, there is a sense of hope that comes from knowing that it's there and waiting.
So therefore, it is important.
Hope is crucial. Hope is like the fuel that keeps us moving forward. Regardless of where we are on that mental health spectrum, we need hope to move us forward. And if we're in a good shape, we need hope. But if we're not doing well emotionally, then one of the first things we need to do is to instill some hope, to believe that we can move forward from where we are.
And we'll discover ways in which we can do that.
Yes, we will.
Here's an interesting question. Is there somewhere where hope comes from, John?
Yeah. You know, to some degree, hope is tied up with our temperament. It's tied up with our innate personality. It's who we are. And some people are just born more likely to look at the positive and optimistic side of things.
I get that, yeah.
And some of us are born just more likely to ruminate on the negative. It's just how and who we are, and often we get that to some degree from our parents. Having said that, hope's also tied up with the experiences of life that we've had. So when we have experienced a good side of life, when our younger childhood experiences have been good, we tend to think that life is okay. Conversely, if we experience some things when we're younger that make us think that life is tough, life is tricky, bad things happen, don't get your hopes up because it gets dashed, then we're more inclined to develop a style of thinking bad things happen and losing hope. So that really speaks to the importance for me of how important protective factors are in well-being, making sure that even if there are some bad things that have happened to us and we have some risks, at the same time, good things that go on for us can be protective and can help maintain hope for us.
Especially in childhood.
Absolutely, yes. In childhood.
John, how have some of the leading thinkers in psychology looked at the whole issue of hope?
Yeah. Do you know, one of the earliest experiences I had with hope was with one of my heroes, it's Aaron Beck, who's the founder of cognitive therapy. The really key thing that he did was understood that relationship between lack of hope and depression.
Okay.
And suicidality. And of course, when we lose hope, then we are far more prone to depression and to feeling that that life is just not worth living. So he was really key for me in understanding the connection between hope and mood in particular. And look, one of his mentees was a well-known psychologist, Martin Seligman. And well before Martin Seligman was the king of positive psychology, he was doing some really interesting research on pessimism and helplessness, doing stuff that probably wouldn't get through ethics committees these days, but it's really fascinating.
And How interesting, yes.
I do want to take a moment just to explain. It's really important stuff. He did some groundbreaking experiments in the late 1960s where he took dogs and he put them into two different experimental cages, let's call them. In both cages, they were geared to get electric shocks. Genuine, unpleasant, distressing for the dogs, electric shocks. Yes. In condition one, the dogs had a latch where they could actually escape the shocks if they were to hit the latch. And so as they got shocked, they'd be looking for a way out, they'd find the latch. In condition two, they'd get exactly the same shocks, but there was no latch. So they tried to find a way out, but they just couldn't.
Dear.
Yes. Oh, dear. I don't think they'd get through that anymore.
No, no.
But the key part is this. He then takes those conditioned two dogs who have been shocked in an inescapable way, puts them into the cage where there is a form of escape.
Hope.
There is hope.
Yes.
The thing is, they have learnt helplessness. They've learnt that actually they can't escape. So although in the new cage there is a latch, they don't even look for it.
What a discovery.
They don't even look for it, and they just put up with the bad stuff and they just give up trying. And for me, look, his research was in also depression and the role of helplessness within that. But the flip side, and where it speaks to hope for me, and especially in therapy, is this idea that often hope is there. There are mechanisms of change available, but when we get really miserable, we don't even see them.
Mm.
So part of the therapy process becomes, how can I help people look for and find those mechanisms? But coming back to your question about key thinkers, there's one other guy I wanted to mention to you. It's a guy called Rick Snyder. He's an American psychologist who did some research around hope and discovered three core elements for what's essential for hope. And the first is goals. It's the idea that we need to have something on the horizon that we want to have happen. It's a positive thing. It's a goal that we want to be part of our lives. The second Snyder concept of hope is pathways, being able to see from where I am now to where I want to get to.
There's a way.
There's a path of some way, and I can see that they're connected.
Mm.
And then the third element for him was this idea of agency. It's that idea of, psychologists refer to self-efficacy, but that belief that I can transition using that pathway towards that goal.
But you well may need some help getting there.
You do.
Yes.
Which again comes down to the awesomeness of meeting with an external person, like a psychologist, to try and plot out that path.
So I'm interested to know how hope works out in practical therapy. How do people who come to see you, John, frame their hope in you, in a way?
Well, that's true. Sometimes people do approach a psychologist with a sense of hope that this magic mental health clinician has what it takes to bring about change for me. So for some people, there is a sense of hope just in seeing a person. Sometimes they come with that hope. Sometimes they come and actually don't have that hope. Mm. And they think, I don't expect that this person's going to be able to do anything for me. I've been feeling miserable for so long. I'm in a hopeless case. I'm only here because my GP said I had to be here, or because my husband or wife have dragged me here and I don't have any hope at all. So hope becomes a really key part of any therapy that we do. It really, as I said earlier, it's the fuel for change. And if we don't have hope, it's very hard for change to happen.
Yeah.
So from a point of view as a psychologist, one of the first things I want to do is try and understand what hopes do people have and how can we build up the hope that they have, because that becomes the fuel to move us forward.
So in a way, you need hope to harness hope.
What we want to try and do is we want to harness hope that might exist.
Okay.
And we've come back to Snyder's concept of goals. Part of the way we do that is just by having that conversation around what is a goal that you want.
Yes.
What does it look like for the place that you want us to get to?
Therefore, the pathway.
First of all, you've got a vision for what it looks like.
Mm.
The second thing is then having a pathway to what sort of steps might lead us to get there. The other thing that's a really key part that we can do to harness hope is to have conversations with people about what I call exceptions to the problem. That is, times when this oppressive problem actually doesn't exist.
Okay.
Things aren't bad all the time. So a conversation around what's it like when the problem isn't there or isn't as strong, and how do we make sense of that, is a way of harnessing hope. And then the other thing that I like looking at is sometimes it's helpful for people to get a little bit of understanding about why they might have lost hope. People aren't born hopeless, but sometimes it can be helpful to realise that experiences that they've had in life have dashed their hope, which also then lays a foundation for being able to say, okay, I can see why I lost it. Maybe now I can start to get it back. So those sorts of conversations can be helpful to harness hope to move forward.
What a great journey to take them on. Can I return to our podcast title just for a minute? Rekindling Hope.
Mm.
That word rekindle, I like your take on that.
Yeah. finding hope doesn't have to start with huge quantities of hope.
Okay.
And I love that concept of kindling, just those little small sticks or twigs that we lay when we want to light a fire. We don't get a huge log and get out a box of matches.
I've never thought of it like this.
A box of matches or a lighter is not going to light a log.
No,
but you
no.
just start with some small bits of twigs and bark and sticks and you build. And that's exactly the same process in therapy. You kindle something, and like a fire, sometimes you don't even know where it's going to go. You don't even know how it's going to spread. But our job in therapy is just to light something, to light up some possibilities and to help people see that things can be different. And once it's alight, hope can take on a life and a vibrancy of its own.
What wisdom. John, as we wrap up, what does this kind of thing look like in practice? Can you share with us some scenarios where you've seen hope develop like this or help like this?
Yeah, sure. Let me share with you two stories of some people that I've been working with lately. Mm. The first is a middle-aged lady. Let's call her Cassie, okay. Not her real name. But she had a couple of life events conspire to batter her hope. Her marriage had broken up. She'd been made redundant over COVID. And she was referred to me by her GP with a growing sense of depression, a lack of enjoyment in life. And she was stuck in this negative cycle of thinking, life sucks, why even bother? And basically she'd given up even trying to change, a bit like Seligman's dogs, if I may say. Mm. So look, our first job with her was to try and rekindle some hope. Our first few sessions were spent largely just discussing what might look like if she was able to rein in some of that spiralling depression, and if we were able to kindle some hope, what small steps might she be able to take to head on a path, start a journey towards what life would look like. And so we did have conversations around how she wanted her future to look, and we did keep our expectations very low, that kindling idea.
Yes.
And to be honest, it took great courage for her to even dare to dream. She'd given up on dreaming or on hoping. We did some work on challenging her self-defeating beliefs that had developed for her when her husband had left and she'd lost a job. But we set in place just some really small steps for how she could start to work towards where she wanted to get to. And so her story of change did involve lots of little steps, and she's not there yet. But she has started a part-time job, and she has started to reconnect with her friends, which she'd stopped going out or seeing mates. And now it's not so foreign or alien for her to have conversations about her desired future, because she's got enough hope to say, okay, maybe it's possible.
I'm interested that involves courage, you say.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It involves courage to step out into an unknown place.
Yes.
Especially one that you doubt could actually work out for you. So there is always an element of courage to take those steps.
Yeah.
And I actually think people who approach a therapist for help have a huge degree of courage. It's a really scary and frightening thing to do, and I admire people who do
that. How admirable, yeah. Second story.
I want to tell you about a guy who's a Year 8 high school student. We'll call him Harry, also not his real name.
Okay.
And Harry has had a lifetime history of dyslexia and ADHD, and school gets really difficult if you have dyslexia and ADHD. So since his earliest days, he's just had this difficulty compared to his peers of doing pretty much even the most basic of school tasks. So he was frequently getting in trouble. He was frequently looking at the schoolwork he was meant to be doing and saying, this just doesn't make sense to me. He was frequently being sent to the deputy principal's office. He was getting a stack of detentions.
Great. Yes, that'll help. Not.
Yeah. Basically, by the end of primary school, he was pretty much resigned to the fact that he just wasn't cut out for school. School just wasn't for him. So, look, early in high school, he was placed on behaviour management programs that inevitably failed. In essence, they just shone the spotlight on what he wasn't good at. Mm. And so his mum brought him to see me in desperation. She was finding it hard to get him to school, finding it hard to get him out of bed in the morning. He was thinking, what's the point of going? I'm just going to get in trouble.
Poor bloke.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Gee. So like Cassie, my first job with Harry was to talk about whether change was even possible. Did he have anything to hope for? And so our early conversations weren't really around his troubles at school or why he wouldn't get out of bed. But we talked about his love of animals. He said he wanted to be a vet one day.
Okay.
But he did understand that to do that would mean he'd have to finish high school. And so part of rekindling hope for Harry involved giving him some little vision that if he really did want to do something with animals, he may need to finish high school.
Yes.
But the other fascinating thing for Harry was that his teachers had also lost hope. His teachers, after having seen him by, you know, late year eight, he was already at a place where his teachers were thinking, well, this kid's, he's just a no-hoper.
How hopeless.
They were hopeless for him. Yeah. They'd given up, and he would come into their class and they would just think, oh, this is going to be a disaster. So part of our work was to also rekindle some hope in his teachers. So we got him off the behaviour management plan, and we put him on a really different plan aimed at catching him not being naughty, but actually aimed at helping him notice when he did something right. So getting his teachers to notice every time that he just attended a class, getting his teachers to notice every time that he did even just 5 minutes' worth of work, every time that he put up his hand to ask a question. And once the teachers were looking for something different, they could actually see, okay, well, he can do some small things.
There's some kindling there.
That's exactly all it's about. Yeah. It's the kindling. And the kindling grew to him then thinking, okay, so I'm not just getting busted by the teachers. They've had said a couple of nice things. They've said I've answered some questions and it's good to see me in class. Look, it's going to be a difficult journey for Harry. I don't want to pretend it's not. But he has started going back to school again regularly. He's handing in some work now.
Wow.
And he's learning and in small ways that there is reward for his effort. And that's a really key thing that he didn't previously have. His hope's growing, slowly.
Well, it's growing. I'm sitting here thinking, what transformative work you're so often involved with.
Every day, I just feel privileged to share the journeys with the people we spend time with.
John Burns, well done. Thank you so much indeed for joining us.
Pleasure.
You've been listening to a podcast in our Resilience and Reinvention series from the Resilience Centre. I'm Lynn Worsley. You'll find other podcasts in these series and lots of other conversations and resources at www.theresiliencecentre.com.au.